Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for another episode. This is number 431, and in just a moment, I'll be sharing an interview I did with Dr. Mikkel Harris and Janet Gwillem Wright, who are the co-founders of Bloomwell Partners, LLC. We're going to be talking about grief in the workplace and the training program that Mikkel and Janet have created for employers to help them do a better job of supporting their employees who are dealing with grief. And I think you'll find this a really interesting conversation, so stay tuned for that. I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to those of you in the U.S. who will be celebrating the holiday this week, if you're listening as this episode first airs. And also, we're getting close to the end of November, and I announced way back earlier this year that the month of December would be a self-care month for me. So I won't be doing any new interviews for the whole month of December. I wanted to let you know that now, but I will be airing some old interviews from the past that have not been shared on this podcast before. But they are from the archives during the days when my recording equipment wasn't so good, so the sound quality is lacking a little bit. But I just wanted to put some content out there that I still really cherish, even though it's from the old days, if I can say that. And I hope you'll find it interesting too, just something to listen to during December while I'm taking a month off to be a grandmother until we come back together again in the new year. So just wanted to let you know about that. Be sure you share this content with other people who might benefit from listening to the podcast. And also, if you're able and willing to offer a bit of financial support, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and you'll find three different ways to make a small contribution that will help keep this podcast on the air. And thanks in advance if you choose to do that. So we'll move on now with my interview with Mikkel Harris and Janet Gwillem Wright. Today, I'm so happy to welcome two guests to the podcast, Dr. Mikkel Harris, who is a licensed psychologist who specializes in coping and adjustment to acute and chronic illness, grief and loss, and health-related trauma. She is a TEDx speaker, blogger, magazine and podcast contributor, and author of a memoir, Relaxing into the Pain, My Journey into Grief and Beyond. In addition, Dr. Harris is the creator of the mini course and ebook, The Grief Anatomy Toolkit, and reimagining her website, MikkelHarrisPhD.com. Mikkel is spelled M-E-K-E-L. So Mikkel, welcome, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wyatt. It is such an honor to be in your presence. Thank you for inviting me to the table.
You're so welcome. And along with Mikkel, let's welcome Janet Gwillem Wright. Janet has 15 years of experience leading large organizational change and working on complex policy issues. A leader in the grief and loss space, Janet founded the Mother Love Project, a global platform for motherless daughters. And I really want to learn more about that. Janet received her Master of Arts in Public Administration from Queen's University. And you can find out more about Janet's work at motherloveproject.com. So Janet, thank you also for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wyatt. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, together, the reason both Mikkel and Janet are here is because together they have founded a project that we're going to learn all about called Bloomwell, and their website is growwithbloomwell.com. And so we'll be talking about that in just a moment. But first, let's start with Mikkel. Just tell us a little bit more about your story, how you got involved in working with grief and loss.
So thank you for the introduction. I never in a billion years thought that I'd be working in the death and dying, grief and loss space. However, life had other plans. across my journey, as I look back, I can see that there were some seeds that were planted to sort of prepare my heart and prepare my mind for what I was about to face. However, in December 2012, my mom, who was my life partner, confidant, best friend, boyfriend, everything in between, received a diagnosis of stage 4 pancreatic cancer just 30 days after her diagnosis. And that was the beginning of my entire career shifting. I made the decision to wholeheartedly focus on grief and loss, really to offer what I needed at that time as a grieving heart. And since then, that was 11 years ago almost, I've had two additional significant losses, including the death of my dad in March 2020. And so life continues to humble and throw curveballs. And as you said so poignantly, I continue to look for those lifelines that keep me grounded and also hopeful in the midst of loss.
And I wanted to also mention that you have an awesome channel on Instagram where you post lots of really wonderful little videos and posts with all kinds of inspiring memes and comments. And people should follow you there on Instagram, because just that little outreach, I think, does great work to comfort people and touch their lives who are coping with grief and loss.
Thank you. Yeah, I have three really primary aims on that, and that's to educate, to help dispel a lot of myths around grief and offer grief literacy, to inspire people and just empower them to know that you can navigate this process as painful and difficult as it is. So thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. And Janet, I already mentioned in your bio that you founded the Mother Love Project, and I'm really interested in hearing more about that and your story and how you came to create Mother Love.
Thank you. Yes. So my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 13, and unfortunately she died when I was 18. She actually died on the day I graduated from high school. And I've really described that day as, you know, the singularly best and worst day of my life. My life imploded the day that she died. And I've been living with grief ever since then. There was no internet when my mom passed away, which was in 1995. And so there were no resources, conversations, no social media. There was no real community of people to kind of reach out to and understand that what I was going through as a young person, you know, just on the precipice of going to university, was very normal. And so I spent many, many years feeling very isolated and just stuck in my grief for a long, long time, well into my 30s. In June 2020, was the 25th anniversary of my mom's death. And because of some unfortunate decisions that other family members made, there's no place to grieve her for me. There's no headstone, there's no memorial place. So I just had this idea that I should create something where I could tell my story. And I thought, if I told my story, maybe other women who've lost their moms would want to tell theirs as well. And so I created a website, I created an Instagram page, I put my story up and I said, if you'd like to share your story, please send it to me with any pictures, and we'll create a living memorial together. And since then, over almost 120 women from around the world have shared their stories on the project. And it's just such a beautiful community of women that have found each other and realize that they're not alone, and the things that they have experienced in their lives are so common. And there are a lot of threads in our grief journey that really connect us to one another. And I think that really does, you know, to Mikkel's point about education and grief literacy, it really dispels a lot of myths about what a griever looks like and how a griever is supposed to feel, and challenges our own assumptions about our grief. And so it's been hugely therapeutic for me. Very healing work. I feel like it's a real calling for me. And it's brought me into this grief awareness and education space in a way that I'm just enormously grateful for.
Oh, that's so beautiful that after so many years of not finding a community and feeling isolated with your grief, you were able to create community that has helped so many other people around grief. And I hear it often now from young people experiencing grief through the loss of a parent, having no place to go where there are peers who can connect with yes. them and talk with them about their loss.
Exactly. Exactly. There was nowhere for me, either in person or online. I mean, we were in the middle of lockdown. I couldn't have gone anywhere if I wanted to, but I hadn't found anywhere that I could really share my experience. And I think that just having this opportunity has really opened up a lot of places in my own heart that I think I felt were shut down for a long time. So, yeah. Thank you.
Well, I can see some intersections between the two of you and your stories, and I'm just curious about how you two came together. How did you get to know one another and start working together?
Yeah.
I'll let Mikhail start. Go ahead.
Yeah. As Janet sort of mentioned, the pandemic obviously burst us all wide open to the fact that we need each other. And when my dad died, as I mentioned, in March 2020, that was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I, as an effort to sort of honor his life and keep those social networks alive during lockdown, decided, you know what? I am going to find people on Instagram and other social media outlets who also have a similar story, who want to connect, because I knew that I needed that. And I thought, similar to Janet, well, this might actually help someone else as well. And so I made it my business to literally just send direct messages to strangers. And I had 52 conversations in 2020 or 2021. And then I decided in 2022, let me try that again. That kind of worked. And so that's what I did with Janet. I entered her inbox and said, you know what? Mother Love Project popped up. I had also experienced the death of my mom. And so that resonated with me. And then as I learned a little bit more about what Janet was posting, I thought, I want to talk to her. So I invited her to do an Instagram Live, and she graciously, crazily, whatever you want to call it, said yes. And that was the beginning of our connection.
I was thrilled that Mikhail reached out to me and said that she wanted to talk to me about the project. And I think I probably immediately responded with, yes, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. We met a couple of weeks on Zoom before we did our IG Live. And as soon as I met her, I thought, this is someone I've known my entire life. I just felt like this instant connection. I felt so happy and comfortable talking to her. And I wanted to get to know her better, and we did the IG Live, and it was so much fun, and it was such a wonderful conversation. And as you said, Dr. Bright, she's a wonderfully gracious host, and we had a great time. And about a month later, I had this idea that we should partner up and do something together. I didn't know what it was. I just had this idea, like, this is a woman that I deeply respect. I don't know her that well, but I want to know her better. And I think that we should partner up and do something. And so I sent her a message and said, do you want to work on something with me? I think we would make a great team. And to her credit, she said, yes.
Yeah. Little did Janet know, right? So I always love how the cosmic forces come together. Little did she know that I had sort of done what I sometimes do, but I'm a little scared to do. And that was, I went into my prayer closet and I too was like, gosh, I want to do something more. And I want to really affect change in this grief and loss space, but I wasn't sure what it was. And so I was an instantaneous yes. And I thought it was just divine completely when she sent the message to me. And we have been working and literally pounding the virtual pavement for over a year now, over a year. Yes. So it's been really fun. A huge blessing.
Where did the idea, the inspiration come from to work on bereavement in the workplace?
I think.
Yeah. So I think that when.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. This is always happening to me and Janet.
Yes,
we actually think alike and we respond.
We're gonna say the same thing. I think I. So I'm gonna let Mikkel tell her story about her workplace experience, but I have a lot of experience with organizational change management, and I'm also a leader in my organization, and I know many, many people who have been through this experience of loss in the workplace and have been very poorly reintegrated. And it's just not something that we talk about. And I think having looked at what we've all gone through over the last 3 years with the pandemic, that need for that kind of conversation is so critical in organizations. And so I had this thought, and then I think we probably had a similar thought at the same time, but as we were brainstorming, I shared this thought with Mikkel, and then she told me the story of her mm-hmm. last experience at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I knew instantly with Janet was just how brilliant she was, and the fact that she'd already served as a leader in so many organizations. I thought, she has something that I don't have. And my dad always told me, don't connect with the people who know what you know, connect with the people who have what you need. And she had that. And so I think when we got together, we just realized, wow, she has this, I have that. And together, that's a superpower. Also, when my dad died, I was still working in the corporate space, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. And shortly after his death, he died on a Monday. And the organization I was working with had a 48-hour bereavement leave. So Wednesday, 2 days after his death, I got a call from my supervisor at the time, no fault of her own, but just policy. She asked, you know, Mikkel, when are you thinking about returning to work? And I knew, even though I didn't voice this at the time, that I was about to quit. And so a month later, with no net and probably, well, completely against my financial advisor's advice, decided I can't do this anymore. I never want to be in a situation where I'm being tasked to do something that physically, emotionally, and psychologically I cannot do. So it was something that I had been personally impacted by. And so we knew we had something really magical as we talked.
And I hear that story over and over again. From people who are grieving and not being recognized in the workplace, being expected to return to work quickly after a loss, and then no one there acknowledging the loss or being able to talk about it, and not even an awareness that perhaps this person needs a lighter workload or needs some sort of adjustment while they're going through this process. Yes. So there, I see that there's a huge need for it. And I don't know if you have statistics or anything on bereavement leave in the U.S. anyway, in the workplace. I know that it's pretty limited, kind of like your experience of very, very limited number of days in most workplaces here.
Here in Ontario, the average is 4 days. So it is very limited. The idea that somebody would in 2 days or 3 days or 4 days be able to return to their work after suffering such a devastating loss. And I think that, as you say, you hear this from grievers all the time. And I think one of the things that Mikkel and I have really learned in doing this work is that grief and loss manifest in so many different ways, that people who are grieving, you know, a divorce or miscarriage or, you know, the loss of an extended family member. It's not just the loss of, you know, an immediate family member or a friend that can really impact their ability to come back to work. I think it's incredible that we have these expectations of people. It's so unbelievably unfair and unrealistic.
Yeah.
And in America, it's, you know, the 3 to 4 average days away until you're expected to return. I can think of 2 organizations that, because of their own internal policy changes, allow for up to 5 days, which sounds like an incredible gift in comparison, but it's still completely insufficient. And so I think you are left with, you know, corporate entities sort of wanting folks to come back. And then you have employees who are resenting that, coming back fatigued, mentally incapacitated, and just completely overwhelmed. So we can see where that is going to go in the organizational impact as a whole.
Yeah. So tell me, what have you two put together, and how are you reaching out to corporations?
Yeah, Janet, I'll let you take the lead on that one. Yeah.
You want me to go? Okay. Well,
yeah, sure.
We have put together our own framework for training managers, people leaders, and HR professionals to deal with grief in the workplace. And this is really a model that builds on Mikkel's extensive experience as a psychologist and a grief educator, and my understanding of best practices in the management space. And it really is an opportunity for us to work with organizations, not only to understand what their culture is like in that organization and what supports they may or may not have in place around grief and loss, but it also gives us an opportunity to work with a cohort of managers or HR professionals to educate them on just these exact things. The impact of grief and loss. What is grief? How do we understand not only the psychological, but physical, financial, spiritual impacts of grief and what that means for an employee returning? So really, and I'll let Mikkel describe our approach, but it really is an opportunity for organizations to look at the mental health benefits or supports they put in place, many of whom rely on EAP, and there's nothing wrong with EAP, but we know that that is a limited service, and some employees don't want to avail themselves of that service. So this really is an opportunity for managers to level up their emotional intelligence and be able to have complex, difficult conversations in a way that they feel confident in doing that, and they understand what the best practices are and what the best approaches are. So that's what I would say, and Mikkel is going to add lots more to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, one of the things that Janet and I were really strategic about, so just to back up a bit, when we sort of came up with this original idea, we started looking around to see, okay, is anybody doing this? Can we build on anything? And what we saw were that there were twigs that we were going to have to put together, right? Not really a lot of bricks. And even a year in, we've only been able to identify a limited number of organizations that touch on this somewhat. But one of the things that we were really determined to do was not just offer education, right? So one of the things I know as a behavioral clinician is that knowledge in and of itself is insufficient. You know that as a physician, right? You met with patients over the years, and you come in and offer education, and they have all the tools, but that doesn't necessarily in and of itself lead to behavioral change. And so I think this is what makes our approach extra special, in that in addition to this 6-part framework and this core sort of proprietary sequence of training modules, we're offering monthly support calls that will allow us live to talk with the managers, talk with these leaders, get a sense of what's going on in their individual organization, and really brainstorm about how they can shift thinking. A lot of our sequence focuses on mindset and sort of shifting the cultural narrative within organizations so that they can not just have the information, but really have the practical space and breadth to be able to sort of interact with the material, as well as identify barriers to what may be working or not working in their organization. So we are super proud of it, and have loved the feedback that we've gotten, particularly around that live piece. As we sort of compare Bloomwell to some other organizations, what we find is that it's that human element, which is what we're hoping to do, is humanizing grief. We thought that we've got to include that person-to-person interaction in a live fashion, so that it's not just sort of amid a lot of just the education noise, if you will. So we're super excited.
I love that idea of the live monthly support group, because I can just imagine it's possible in a corporation you're working with that they haven't had a bereaved person working for them, or at least they haven't known they have had someone bereaved working for mm-hmm. them. So as you mm-hmm. said, they're getting all the education, but they aren't sure how to apply it. And those calls allow them, the moment something does happen and there is a need in their organization, they can come back to you on that call and say, remind me again, how do I apply everything I learned? And we have a real life situation happening. Mm-hmm. And that's so very valuable as a teaching method.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of this work is about sort of constantly, and as a grieving person, we do this daily, right? We're constantly evaluating our emotional landscape, if you will. However, in a corporate space, beyond when that person first comes back, we evaluate it in the acute stage, if you will. However, weeks, months, years down the line, we sort of assume that we're back to a status quo. And so one of the threads across all of our training modules and in our live support calls is evaluation of the cultural landscape and looking at sort of how grief continues to manifest beyond the first week when that person comes back, so that managers can really understand how to communicate, how language matters, and how to effectively support beyond sort of cliches, so that the employee feels as if their grief is normalized in that space.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much discussion about empathy, and while empathy is so important, we are trying to work with organizations to build compassion and to understand what that looks like in organizational spaces. And I just know from having managed people myself and working with other managers that they may not feel that that is necessarily part of their role when we know that we have a duty of care to the folks that work with us. So it is very important in terms of shifting that organizational culture towards compassion and understanding from, you know, a very much a business and productivity and retention perspective, why that's important, and building that in as well.
And I think, Janet, I think that when organizational leaders sort of recognize, because let's face it, something as devastating happens to an employee, and the first thought is, I don't want to touch that. Like, I'm not sure what to say. Or I literally don't feel like that's my role, but I think it's important, and we discuss this in our curriculum, is that the ripple effects of grief is not just about that individual. We've got to look at this, of course, at a very micro level with the person, but also the contextual ripple effects that can happen in that organization and then beyond in the community. So as one person grieves, it affects all of us. And we know how important organizational well-being is. So if we can create a roadmap and an understanding within that work culture, it benefits not only the person, it benefits the organization, and it benefits the community as a whole.
Oh, that makes so much sense, because we know that grief that is not acknowledged, as you said, there is a ripple effect on everyone around the griever. In fact, coworkers who are wondering, should I say something? I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. What do I even do? How do I behave? They can't talk to anyone or ask anyone, what should I do to support this person? And once you change mm-hmm. the culture at the top, I think sometimes these changes have to come from the top, and the ripples go down throughout.
No, I was going to say that I actually have this story of when, after my mom died, I was working as a professor in academia. And about 3 weeks after she died, I was standing before my students. And in class, you know, of course, I was in a very grief avoidant, you know, I had a grief avoidant mentality, even as a mental health professional. And I thought, grief is not going to get me. It's just not going to affect me. So I was determined to sort of stand in that class and just do what I needed to do. Well, that quickly came falling apart, you know, just days upon my return in the classroom. And I remember feeling incredibly isolated. So I just happened to have an office, and one of the walls was glass, so everybody could see into my office. And I remember feeling like I was in a fishbowl. And I could feel just these pitiful stares and people sort of whispering, but no one would actually come and have a conversation. until a few months later, I did have one of my colleagues actually, I thought, try to address a conversation about something else. Well, what they came to do was offer one of the greatest gifts that we can give a grieving heart, and that is presence. She literally came and said, can I just come into this office? And that was one of the most profound things that she could have done. Little did she know that I had already started plotting in my mind how I was going to escape that environment. So that was perfectly timed and kept me there because I finally felt seen in the organization.
Yeah. Mm,
that's a beautiful story. And you're right. In our minds, we might imagine if we're being called upon to support someone who's grieving, that it takes a lot. I would have to do a lot in order to help them.
Yes.
But it's as simple as just showing up, even if you have no idea what to say and don't say a word.
That's
absolutely
right. Yeah. I sat there that day and she was to my back. But what I tell you, the phrase, like, I have your back, I literally could feel the warmth of her presence. And that helped sustain me for many, many days. And she was always welcome to sit on that couch from that point on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. We talk so much about diversity and equity and inclusion. And part of this work is about creating belonging. And what Mikkel's colleague did was extend a compassionate hand to say, you belong here. And that is something that a lot of employees, when they're coming back from dealing with a loss, or they haven't even had a chance to go away and grieve that loss because they don't have the time or they don't have the Weaver space, but they have to continue to put on this happy face, this fake front, even in a shocked state or a bewildered state, that they don't feel that they belong. And that sort of broken trust, that broken sense of belonging, is very, very hard to get back. And so that's one of the things that we talk about is how to create, what is that safety in the workplace? How do we keep safety in the workplace in the front of our minds when we're thinking about a griever and how to support them? And you're right, it's very simple gestures that can help somebody continue on in that position that they worked so hard to put that person in the first place.
Right.
So there are a lot of different strategies that we talk about in our training.
That's so beautiful. I'm thinking back, and I told Mikkel this in our Instagram live that we just did 2 days ago, that back when my father died by suicide, I was the boss. I was the employer in my own office. And so I could set a policy, but I had no idea that that could be important. And I knew I have to pay the bills. I have to keep my employees working so I can pay them. But I'm just now realizing, oh my gosh, what must it have been like for my employees when I came back to work, having no idea what to say? Do we talk about it? Do we ask about it? Do we just act like nothing happened? Because none of us had the ability to really sit down and have a discussion, and how much this training might have made a real difference for me as the boss, even to help my staff help me and to talk about how are we all going to get through this together, and what a difference that might have made.
Wow. Yeah. What a beautiful reflection. And an interesting sort of take on that as the owner, the CEO, the boss yourself. As you were talking, I was reminded of something that one of my professional mentors always says that I love and hate, and that is that vulnerability begets vulnerability. And so from him to me, it's always a charge to be vulnerable. If, as I'm mentoring folks or supervising or whatever I'm doing in a leadership capacity, if I expect that person or those people to do the same thing. And it's incredibly difficult and uncomfortable. Yet, I think when a manager, whether they've experienced a death of a loved one or not, all of us can identify with death. And part of why Janet and I decided to sort of intentionally make our curriculum broad instead of very narrow was because we want to acknowledge the fact that all of us can identify with that universal life experience. whether that be divorce, physical death, the loss of an identity, the loss of an the death of an expectation or hope. Mm-hmm. We all can tap into that. And when we can, then it creates a space for the manager who hasn't experienced the death of a loved one to still be able to connect because it's universal. So yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead, Janet.
Well, just these conversations continue to be so taboo in the workplace. And I think that, you know, as managers who want to do their best, they don't, as you say, want to offend. They don't want to say the wrong thing. They're uncomfortable. They don't want to make their employee uncomfortable, or they don't want their employees to be uncomfortable around them as the boss. So I think, as Mikhail says, the more we lean into these conversations with openness and humility and a sense that, you know, these are skills that can be learned. It takes the sting out of it for people. It takes the some of the taboo, but also the discomfort as well, which is so important.
And to know that's what the grieving heart wants, right? Yes. I think that I remember, and I can even say now, like I go into social situations and I can literally feel people cringing inside because they don't want to bring up my mom or my dad. And I'm like, no, I want to talk about that.
Yes.
That would be the greatest thing, to hear their voice or to tell a story or to reflect on some aspect of their lives. Like what a great legacy that can still live on after their physical death. And so again, just reminding managers and leaders, like it's okay. And it's actually wanted. People want to talk about that. And they want to know that their grief has been witnessed and acknowledged in some way.
Oh, that's so true. That alone is such a powerful little bit of wisdom, that if everyone knew that, it would make a difference in how they handle their coworkers, but also their neighbors and their friends and other people in their lives, to just know it's open and welcome for you to talk about this or say something and make a comment or ask a question even.
Absolutely.
Early in my career, I was working in Houston at MD Anderson Cancer Center with kids diagnosed with cancer and their families. And there were several families over the years who, for many reasons, decided that they did not want their child to know that they had cancer. Now, mind you, you know, they were driving to the Cancer Institute and it says it on the building, but they didn't want to actually say that because they thought, if my child knows they have cancer, they'll lose their will to survive. And it was really ironic as I worked with those kids, because every single one of them knew, even if they didn't have the name or the diagnosis, they knew that something was going on in their bodies. Why? Because they were the experts on their bodies. And so what I shared with the parents was that if we don't name what is, what the other person does is sort of go into a realm of assumption. And again, back to behavioral psychology, we actually magnify the problem. We think that the outcome is much worse than it is. So what a gift it can actually be to name what's really going on in the space. And for us with Bloomwell, it's, let's name the fact that yes, death has occurred. Yes, it's painful. And how can we continue to normalize this day to day in the workplace so that you don't feel isolated, overwhelmed on your own? Which is much worse as a grieving heart than talking about it.
Yeah. Wow. That just brought up something so powerful for me that I never thought of before, Mikhail, but the fact that I experienced a lot of guilt after my father died by suicide, which is very common with suicide, but because I couldn't talk about it, I didn't talk about it with anyone else around me. I made the assumption that other people thought it was my fault, or other people were thinking, why didn't she stop her father? Why didn't she do something? And for how many years I assumed that other people were blaming me, which wasn't even true, because we didn't talk about it. And the whole solution would have been to have conversations. And as you said, be vulnerable and be able to talk about it, because that risk of making those very harmful assumptions is real. That really happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in organization, you can imagine that if that manager chooses not to name that, you have a grieving employee functioning on an island. You have coworkers who, because the leader's not doing it, thinking, well, I don't want to be the one to address the elephant in the room. And the manager probably feeling inept and inadequate, when if everyone came together to just name what's going on, what we can all breathe. Right? We can actually have some freedom from our self-imposed hostage situations.
Yeah. And one of the things that those conversations really open up, and what I've seen in my own work environment and giving talks, across organizations about my own grief and loss story and challenges and those assumptions, is that all of these people come forward then to put up their hands and say, wow, I've had that experience too. Oh my gosh, I thought it was just me. Or, I just did a talk last week and this woman put up her hand and said, you know, you're talking about the death of your mom, but I've had a series of miscarriages that I had a really supportive manager at that time. And I think if I hadn't had that manager, boy, I would not have been able to get through that the way that I did. But what you're talking about in terms of your own grief really resonates with me. There were probably 20 people on that call who put up their hand and said, I've had a very similar experience. And it created this environment of, we are not alone in this, even though we probably spent a long time feeling that we are. And it's really, really powerful to share those stories, especially in the work.
Yeah.
What I can imagine, I don't know if there have been any studies, and maybe because being conscious of bereavement in the workplace is still a fairly new thing, but it seems to me the workforce would be so much stronger after dealing with this in terms of just how they come together, how they even work together and cooperate. Absolutely. And have compassion for one another in day-to-day projects.
I can speak a little bit to sort of the data around that. What's shown up in the literature, as far as I can see, is this awareness that if we do talk about it, there's potential for post-traumatic growth for the person and the leader to sort of bond, but longitudinally, right? There's not data as of yet to support, okay, what does this look like in terms of the long-term ripple effects and the benefit to organizational wellness and well-being? So that's where, again, this is exciting territory. And Janet and I were talking about this with an upcoming, the American Psychological Association and other organizations, about taking what we're doing and continuing to maintain that relationship with the organizations that we're working with over time, because now you have some data points to actually point to, okay, this isn't just a one-time, 7-week or 8-week training. Yeah. We have seen that this has improved organizational cohesion. This has resulted in greater communication and leveling up emotional intelligence, as Janet mentioned, over time, which of course we know that's going to improve productivity, teamwork, camaraderie, and so much more in the organization. So we are right on the cusp of so many wonderful. So many things are right.
Well, absolutely. And we know from a retention perspective, it is very expensive to replace somebody. The loss of corporate knowledge is very expensive, and it causes, again, these ripple effects across teams, across organizations. So we know there is an organizational imperative for compassion and for those trust bonds that can be developed not only with a manager and an employee, but amongst colleagues as well. Absolutely. I mean, I know it from my experience, and I think we all have, when we have those good positive relationships, it makes working much easier. And from a creativity perspective and innovation perspective, absolutely will improve the team dynamic.
So hopefully work that Janet and I are doing, as well as others at this point, will continue to focus on data, right? So let's be honest. Organizations, for the most part, we like the qualitative discussion, but we really want the quantitative data. And so what we're hoping to do over time is to sort of garner that to help make a case that, yes, this is not just a feel-good moment. These are data-driven practices that are going to really revolutionize your organization and help us continue to pitch to organizations around the globe about why this is so critical.
It's really exciting. And I'm thinking, of course, always thinking big picture, but when you think of the ripple effect through a corporation, but way beyond that, each worker at the corporation who's been touched by grief and now has this new awareness of grief and the importance of talking about it and supporting other people just in their personal lives, what an impact that will have.
Oh, yes. Yes. Huge. Opening up channels of communication. I mean, think about it. We spend more time with our coworkers than our families.
Exactly.
And so what better place to sort of embed these skills? And you're right. This can manifest and have a positive ripple effect in a marriage, in a family, in a household, which, as I mentioned, impacts the community. So really, really important work. And I'm so grateful to be with you and Jane and other thought leaders in this area to help further the cause.
Well, I mentioned, you know, wondering what was it like for my staff in my office watching me grieve and probably not feeling permission that they could talk to me about it or support me. But then a memory came to me. One of the clinic assistants from our office one evening showed up at my house where, I mean, she'd never come to my house before. I didn't even know she knew where I lived. But she showed up with a big pot of homemade soup and just dropped it off and left and didn't say a word. But she brought me soup, and it was like the best soup I've ever eaten in my life and the most healing. And so I just realized, I mean, she kind of violated the employee boss, the distancing of our relationship, the professional boundary that should have been there by coming to my house. But that meant so much to me. And it was such a small and simple act. And I've always thought, I just want to tell everyone, if you don't know what else to do, if you show up with a little bit of food for someone, that is such an act of love and support. Because when you're grieving, for me, that was the hardest thing. I couldn't go to the grocery store. I could not plan a meal. I just didn't have the bandwidth to take care of that. And so the times people brought food to me, those stand out hugely in my mind.
those practical day-to-day things that, as you mentioned, you don't have the bandwidth for. I love that you sort of brought up the word boundary, because I think that what Janet and I, and this just came to my mind, I don't think we've articulated this per se, but essentially wanting to disrupt this idea of work-home boundary. There's John Kabat-Zinn wrote a book, and he's famous for saying, like, wherever you go, there you are. Mm-hmm. And I think death, you can't compartmentalize yourself. I think a lot of us, myself included in the past, work to compartmentalize it and really keep it away from work. But the truth is, wherever you go, there you are. And so we need to disrupt this idea of blurring home to work. I think the pandemic helped to sort of deconstruct that a little bit. But really figuring out how can we, in the blurriness of it all, support each other with compassion and yet maintain the necessary hierarchical sort of structures in the organization in a grief-informed way. So thank you for hearing that word.
Mm. Yes. I love that. I love that story that you told, and just thinking about all the love that went into that soup. And you probably felt that as you were eating it. And we don't typically think about our work relationships as being loving or compassionate. We reserve that for our family and friends. But as Mikhail said, we spend an enormous amount of time with our coworkers. And I know that, having worked with leaders in lots of different organizations, you know, their employees want to show them the love and loyalty that they have been shown when they go through a hard time, that they're concerned. Mm-hmm. They can see this manager, this executive struggling so much, and all they want to do is help, and yet they feel powerless, I think, to make that impact. So, you know, I think that it's such a beautiful thing that your clinical assistant took that step and really just, you know, extended that love to you. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
I can just imagine sort of like bravely dropping off the soup and peeling it out of the driveway, hoping that she wasn't seeing it.
Yeah. Hope this is okay. And yeah, here I am. I still remember how delicious it was. I haven't forgotten that. It was so special. Yeah, I liked your statement that death doesn't have boundaries. Any boundaries we impose around it are just of our own creation, because death affects all of us. And that's one of the reasons we need to come to terms with it.
That's right. Yeah. Like I said, active resistor in recovery here. And so it's a daily reminder to accept. I think you said this on our Instagram Live, something to the effect of, it's one of your lessons. It's one of your lessons for the living from the dying, about just embracing the reality of what is and to not resist. And you can definitely speak to the actual phrase, and I apologize, but it's just accepting what is and letting go of the resistance to it all.
That's exactly true. Accepting that life is hard and it has painful moments and challenges, and it will devastate us at times, but resisting that and trying to pretend like that's not the truth just exhausts our energy. And that's one reason people become less productive at work in a way too, if they're trying to resist experiencing their own pain, when once we just finally accept it and learn how to embrace it, we can begin to function a little bit better within that circumstance.
I was just saying, and regardless of position or status,
yes,
this is our humanity, right? This impacts all of us, regardless of the jobs that we do. And so as leaders, we have to accept, like, we're not perfect. If we're experiencing these struggles in our own, if we've had our own loss, like naming that and recognizing the impact that that's going to have on our day-to-day work performance is going to be hugely beneficial to our employees. That gives them permission to recognize their own humanity at work. And that is really important. It's really important for, you know, bereavement, and it's really important for our mental health as well. So, you know, I think that there are so many different facets to this conversation that I think are so helpful for people at work and people everywhere, but definitely in our day-to-day work lives.
What she said.
Well, I'm so excited about what you're offering. And I'm wondering if someone out there listening is thinking, oh, this is what my company needs. How do they go about working with the two of you?
Yeah. So if someone's watching this and you're thinking, well, this is my organization, but I'm feeling a little timid about how to approach it, Jana and I created some templates, and we've already thought about the language and how to communicate that in a way that may be palpable for your organization. So you can certainly reach out to us at growwithbloomwell.com. And once you get there, you'll see a contact for our email address. You're also welcome, if you're on social media, particularly Instagram, to send us a direct message. Believe it or not, we don't have VAs or AI. It literally is us in the inboxes. And you're welcome to reach out directly to support our work. And we would love that. We definitely want to impact organizations around the world. And we know that starts with you or anyone watching this to help support our cause and our mission.
So is the on Instagram, is it also Grow with Bloomwell on Instagram?
I'm going to let Janet answer this.
No, it's not. And the reason Mikkel is laughing is because we've had this debate back and forth about Instagram. We are, she's gonna message me later about that, I'm sure. No, Mikkel is at Dr. Mikkel Harris, and I am at Janet Willem Wright. On LinkedIn, we are Bloomwell Partners. And if you would like to connect with us on LinkedIn, we would love that as well. But please do message us on Instagram if you are there. Either one of us would be happy to talk to you. And ideally, both of us would be happy to talk to you as well.
Yeah. When Janet and I talked about having a separate, you know, Bloomwell Instagram, we thought, well, gosh, if we did that, we would have 5 Instagram pages that we're managing between the two of us. And so we opted to go with LinkedIn. So certainly follow us at Bloomwell Partners. But yeah, that tickled me. Thank you for that, Dr. Y.
That makes sense. That makes sense. As someone who has different handles on every social media platform, I understand. It gets to be overwhelming at a certain point. So, all right, I'll leave links for all of that in the show notes for anyone who would like to get in touch with you. But this is so exciting, and I'm so happy to hear that you're doing it, and it's so very, very needed. So my hope is someone listening out there says, this is exactly what needs to come to my organization, and we'll reach out to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And just thank you for being who you are. You have done it again, Dr. Y. You've created a very environmentally friendly space where I feel like I'm sitting in your living room, just having a conversation. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate both of you joining me, and I'm excited about the work you're doing, and I can't wait to hear as you go along about how you grow well and change over time.
Thank you so much for having us. We're really grateful.
You're very welcome. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dr. Mikkel Harris and her partner, Janet Gwillem Wright, about their work with Bloomwell Partners LLC, training employers to deal with workplace bereavement. It's such an important topic, and we've been talking about it for quite a while now, and how much change is needed in this area. And so I'm excited to see what they're putting together, and I believe it will make a big difference. As we begin this Thanksgiving week, I want to say I'm grateful to all of you who've been listening for a number of years and all of you who have stepped up and made financial contributions as well. It means everything to me. And I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity to be here having amazing conversations with people who are doing wonderful work all around the world, and that you're there as listeners so that I can share them with you. It's truly a blessing for my life, and I'm very thankful for the podcast itself and for all of you who are joining me here as part of this community. And so I wish many blessings for you. I'll be back next week. Until then, remember that we're here for love. So face your fear. Be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of this very precious life. Bye-bye.